What's up, hockey fans? This is episode 110 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke. And Sean, I called it. Boudreaux to Vancouver. Feeling pretty good about my prediction skills.
Yeah, so this is where you're going to edit in just, in Clappercast history from about 3 weeks ago when you proposed Bruce Boudreaux as the Canucks' next head coach to me. But yeah, I mean, for context here, we've been talking about it for a few weeks again. The Canucks finally made their cleaning house moves. They took out Travis Green and Nolan Baumgartner from head coaching side and replaced them with Bruce Boudreaux and Scott Walker. Then they also fired Jim Benning and John Wiesbrod out as GM and assistant GM. Then Stan Smeal's taking over on the interim basis, as well as the Sedins are apparently getting a bit more of a role in the day-to-day operations.
Yeah, trying to buy some goodwill back with the fans who are extremely pissed off, I think.
Absolutely.
Bringing the Sedins more involved.
Well, yeah, to bring in, you know, because Stan Smeal's got a very good reputation amongst Vancouver and their fans. You know, the Sedins obviously have an amazing reputation, so it's all kind of damage control, reputation stuff at this point, just to kind of buy some time.
Yeah, absolutely. The Canucks play their first game under Boudreaux about a couple hours from when we're recording this, and I'm excited to see what happens. I mean, you know, like sometimes when there's a coaching change, the team immediately, you know, goes out and wins a few games and then kind of returns back to normal. So we'll see.
Well, the interesting thing, earlier today I saw a tweet that was talking about just the general atmosphere at practice, and they were talking about the smiles being back. And, like, Boudreaux going around to the different players, and he's getting them all smiling, all laughing, and just, like, the general mood just seems a bit more uplifted amongst the players, a bit less defeated. A bit more, you know, like we talked about in the past, a bit more loosey-goosey.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, Bruce Boudreaux is kind of more of a lighter guy. He's definitely more of, like, a player's coach. I think the players are probably smiling because they know they don't have to endure, like, Travis Green's, like, ridiculous... like training camp, you know, like all the crazy skates that they have to do. There's those photos of, like, you know, Connor Garland like puked and like Ollie Ualevi was like dead on the ice, and Ekman Larson was
20 laps behind.
So the players are probably smiling because they're like, yeah, we don't have to, you know, go through that grueling ordeal. So yeah. But yeah, I mean, like when I pitched the idea to you like a couple episodes ago, you know, I just thought it might be a good fit because, like, you know, the Canucks seem like a team that would work under his like former wheel and deal type of offense. So
exactly, I mean, he was quite an offensively talented player in his day, and he was in the minors, one of the better forwards in AHL history. And he kind of brings that same mentality to coaching. And, Boudreaux has this really good ability to get a lot out of teams, like, really quickly, to really turn them around. You know, he's got a solid track record. He's only made it past the second round of the playoffs once, but at this point, like, Vancouver just wants to, like, be decent. Let's worry about the third round of the playoffs, you know, later on. Let's just get to the playoffs maybe at this point.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see if he's going to be like his time in Washington, or if it's going to be more of a style closer to what he was in Minnesota. But I don't think the defense is quite as good.
No, you'd think he'd have to go more of the Washington style because kind of more similar roster build. Not quite as good, but similar roster build anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like he's probably got like better goaltending. He's probably got a player very much like Mike Green and in Quinn Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if he'll pot like 40 or whatever crazy stat Mike Green had, like 30 goals or something as a defenseman, something like that. But definitely that offensive defenseman, and then some really good forwards. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I think it's a good fit, and I'm just curious to see how it plays out. And, you know, I made the joke when I threw the idea to you, is just like, you know, another former Capitals personnel, you know, joining, making their way to the Canucks. Like,
do the Caps have any random former GMs or coaches that would be a good GM that the Canucks or the Canucks can bring in?
I don't know. I mean, they've been pretty stable on the whole GM front. Like, you know, in recent history, they've got Brian McClellan and then George McPhee. And I think it was like David Poile or something before that, like way back. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess like Dale Hunter or like, I don't know. I'm sure there's somebody.
It's just got to fit the track record here. You got to bring in an ex-capital to be the GM of the Canucks.
Yeah, it's who else will they get? You know?
Now, something that was really weird and interesting to me about this is that it's come out now that Boudreau was an Aquilini hire. Like, the Aquilinis own the team. The owner hired the new coach without even giving the new GM a say or the chance to fill that role himself. That's a really weird situation when you have the owner meddling that much.
Yeah, I mean, the Canucks fandom has always, I don't know, been, I guess, had the honor of dealing with the Aquilini's, like, very active hand in the team. And yeah, it's kind of weird, you know, they hire the coach, fire the GM after, then your search for a long-term GM begins. It's like, all right, how long is Boudreau going to be around? Is he going to clash with the new GM?
Because they did only give Boudreau a 2-year contract. So he's not there long-term. But so if it doesn't work out with the new GM, then, you know, he's only there for a couple seasons. But that's still a weird one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know who's out there. I haven't seen as many fun rumors as, like, the Montreal rumors for who was, like, interviewing for that.
The only real name that I had seen is some random speculation that the Canucks might be interested in Bergevin.
Yeah, I mean, hey, like I said last time, like, he didn't do a bad job.
No. No, I saw a decent Reddit comment earlier that it's like, Bergevin as a GM is very good. Like, he did a great job at building the team and, you know, the tactical side of being a GM. He just has no ability to put a cohesive team together. That's where he struggled, and that's where Montreal struggles. So if, like, you bring Bergevin in to deal with, you know, the tactical side of the GM and then making the moves and stuff, and then you have someone else give him the strategy.
Yeah, I mean, he did end his career with the Canucks, too. So, you know, maybe there's a very, very minimal connection there. I think he's, like, as far as guys who are out there, he's a pretty good option.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do too.
So, I don't know. I like the move for Boudreau. I think he fits the team better than Green did. Like, you know, your strength on that team is offense. So you need an offensive coach that will let those players do what they need to do. You know, he's like, it's only been what, a day or whatever, but it's like, you know, Boudreau was asked about Pettersson. Boudreau's in quotes here, "I want to find out where he's at. I know how good he can be and how good he has been. I want to know if there's reasons that he hasn't been that player right now." And so it's like, you know, he's coming into town, just trying to check in on where everybody's at. Pettersson came off of an injury. You know, he's had glimpses of success this season, but very, very sporadic. So, you know, I just think, like, you know, is it coaching? Is it a systems thing? What is it? Like, what is there something that was hindering his success? New coach could change that, maybe.
And, like, that's a good answer. It kind of speaks to the player's coach side, where he's not just out there discussing his performance. He's going into it inquisitively, where he wants to work with Pettersson and find out what's going on, you know, actually be a coach or a leader for the player instead of just directing them around.
Yeah, so we'll see. I think, like, Boudreau will be good for sound bites. Like, he's a funny guy. So
he's also, you know, the owner of my all-time favorite gif.
Oh, that one, Frick.
Yeah, the one where he's on the bench, he very clearly lets out a massive f-bomb, and then the caption is just darn.
yeah,
that's my all-time favorite.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'm looking forward to it anyway. And then there was some other movement in the league on the coach front, where Philadelphia Flyers ended their relationship with Elaine Vigneault as head coach, and they had next man up here with Mike Yeo rolling into the head coaching job from his previous role as, I don't know, assistant or something.
So after Philadelphia's game yesterday against Tampa Bay, you could sense that something like this was going to happen right away. The team was completely disjointed, disheartened, completely all over the place on the ice. Carter, like, there's that one iconic goal. Carter Hart tries to clear the puck out of his zone. It goes straight into Matthew Joseph, and he doesn't really get back in time, and Joseph scores a shorthanded goal off of it. Plays like that, just something's off in the messaging to that team, and it was time for the change. They've struggled for the last, 10, 15 games, big time. Yeah. So you know something's going to have to change because they're better than how they're performing. Like you said, Mike Yeo takes over on the interim basis. They also let go of Michel Therrien, from what I saw. So they're finally getting rid of their five head coach thing that they had going on there.
the combined forces.
Yeah, might be
three head coaches that got fired before.
Yeah. We should clarify, Mike Yeo is there on an interim is taking over on an interim basis, as I don't quite see if he'd be an improvement on anything. However, the immediate return, like you said, teams kind of turn it around for a few games when they get a coaching change. They've done good against Colorado today, and a lot of the guys who have been struggling, like Claude Giroux and Travis Konecny, have both had solid games already so far. A couple of points each, I think.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, they should be a pretty good team, and they just had an okay start and then just sucked. So,
yeah,
something needed to give there, and, you know, first move is always the coach, so no surprise.
So a name that I had seen rumored to be, you know, possibly linked to that job is Rick Tocchet.
That makes sense.
I was thinking that too, right? That's kind of his style. They're struggling the defense, the systems, the goalie. Bring in a defensive coach.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. I could see that. I don't know how much better they'd be, but that makes sense for them to bring them in, especially with, like, you know, the new defensive lineup they have. And one thing that's interesting here is that, you know, I sent this to you on Instagram, but, like, Rasmus Ristolainen, what is this, like, his ninth coach in his career?
Yeah, it's his eighth coach in 9 years.
It's just ridiculous.
Which is, like, that's just got to be so hard on a player. At a certain point, you just don't even bother. It's kind of the same thing that I think Taylor Hall was talking about after leaving Edmonton and into Buffalo. It's just like you have so many coaches, at a certain point, you just can't keep anything straight. You just kind of tune it out.
Yeah, it's just so funny because he's probably like, oh, finally got out of Buffalo.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah. Nope. The shit follows you around, Rasmus. Not that, you know, he's the only person responsible for anything, but it's just kind of funny that he thought he was out and he got dragged back into the new coach lifestyle. Can't escape it.
No, Rasmus Ristolainen is just an unintentional coach killer, apparently.
I guess so, yeah. It's like Phil Kessel, coach killer. Yeah, and then I guess, you know, one of the things the league is kind of buzzing about today is that Jets and Toronto Maple Leafs game that happened last night. I'm really kind of upset that I missed that one. But did you watch that one?
Yeah, I had that one on in the background, caught bits and pieces of it. But it was a spicy game that was a terrible showing by the refs. That they really let that one get out of hand, and you saw it eventually when Pionk and Spezza ended up going and kneeing people. The scrums, the physicality, the plays were just completely unnecessary for the most part. But so, like, the big story is that you're going to get two kneeing suspensions out of the same game. So let's start with Neil Pionk, since we know he got two games for his already. And, like, that's a very clear knee. He sticks his knee out to a guy who's out of his path. and catches him right on the knee. Rasmus Sandin is down. He's hurt now, and I haven't heard anything about the severity of it, but it didn't look good on the ice.
No, yeah, I think the two games is an acceptable number. It looked like, you know, as far as, you know, like intent or anything, it looked like he just got beat. And it was one of those things where I'm going to stick my leg out to try and stop him because he's going to get a clear scoring chance.
Going. Yeah. Yeah. Because Pionk had the upper body going still. Like he was bracing up his arms and shoulders as well to make the hit. But he got, like you said, he got beat and his leg stuck out.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, he wasn't going for the knee, but he wasn't trying to let a guy get by him. So he stuck it out. And then, yeah, happy with 2-game suspension. Mm hmm. And then the other one is Spezza on Pionk later in the game. I don't know how much later, but I know that the Leafs were pretty upset with that hit. And so this one's like Pionk is in his defensive zone. He's got no stick. He's like trying to go kneel down almost to like play the puck with his gloved hand.
Yeah, he kind of dives out to play it with his glove hand instead. And swatted away.
Spezza kind of comes out of frame, and Pionk's going down to play the puck very clearly the whole time. He doesn't just, like, erratically drop to his knees or anything, mm-hmm. and Spezza comes in, doesn't hold up, hits him. It's, like, almost, like, knee to his head.
Yeah, right in the lower head neck area.
And just takes him out.
Luckily, I think Pionk's okay, right?
I think so.
I didn't see any injury report on him.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything about an injury for him. But, I think that hit was just, to me, looked a lot worse.
Absolutely, 100%. Like that, like you said it perfectly, that Pionk is very clearly in a vulnerable position. He's down, he's diving out, and Spezza has all the time in the world to adjust, to stop, to do anything to avoid making that contact how he did, but he drives into it and like he follows through with it right into the neck, right into the shoulder, right into the lower jaw.
Yeah, so he basically took Pionk's number from earlier in the game and then wanted to take him out.
So he
was one way or another.
So he's got an in-person hearing, on Tuesday, I think? So there's the potential for quite a lengthy suspension off of that one.
Yeah, and I think that would be warranted because it's like a vulnerable player in a vulnerable position. Yeah. You are clearly took his number from earlier in the game and you wanted to, you know, take some revenge out on him, which is fine, but you did it in a way that's not legal. So
yeah, that's...
You should be suspended.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to hurt him. Like, you could argue intent to injure there.
Totally.
So, the Leafs have been hitting in some spicy games. Like, I mean, when they played the Minnesota Wild, like, Foligno kind of hopped off the bench and hopped back on. Did you see that one?
I did, yeah. I saw the explanation for why that was okay. Because no one actually replaced Foligno. He was still half on the ice, and no one had jumped on to replace him. So, I guess, I don't know the rule on that. Like, I don't know the actual wording of it. But that's what I heard, is that because no one had replaced Foligno yet, he was still okay.
Yeah, it was like a stoppage, basically, and he like hopped on the bench. And when I mean hop on the bench, he like hopped on the half boards.
Yeah.
With his butt on it, with his legs still hanging over the ice.
Yeah.
And then he just immediately popped back off and got into a bit of an altercation. I think it was with like Simmons or something. And then, of course, you know, Toronto fandom, that's leaving the bench. And blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, well.
Not quite. He was still technically
on the
ice.
He was off the ice for like 2 seconds and then came right back. It's not like he was like leaping off the bench. And
yeah, not the way
being
that it
a
would
sixth
appear.
Skater for Minnesota. Like, you know, it was whatever. It's pretty tame. So, but anyway, they've been getting some interesting games, a little bit more intensity in their games. And They've been playing pretty good. You know, Matthews has got like a 6 or 7 game goal streak, I think. And then, yeah. So anyway, the Leafs are adding that fire, which makes their games a little bit more fun to watch, because sometimes you watch them and it's just not there, and this like it is right now. So,
and that's kind of a good sign for the team, because that's kind of one of the things that seems to be a major issue for them, especially as they try to make a deeper playoff run, is the intensity and the engagement is sometimes just not quite there in a way that it needs to be. So if they're getting, you know, if they're getting like this in regular season games, they're able to play like this. Hopefully they can keep it cleaner than Spezza does.
Yeah.
But if they can, I mean, if they can keep that same level of engagement, well, you know, he's not a goon or anything, but you know,
yeah,
but like that's a good sign for the team's success, you know, later on in the season.
Yeah, for sure. And kind of the same thing for the Jets, right? Like they've been on a bit of a, you know, I don't know, a bit of a skid. A lot of their good players weren't really performing all that well. And then kind of like this last week, they've kind of exploded. You know, Wheeler's been getting a bunch of assists. Shifley's been lighting it up. Even like Dubois in that game against Toronto, he was like manhandling Matthews and was like all over him. And so ended up winning that game 6-3, which was, you know, obviously huge for them. But, you know, they've been kind of pulling themselves out of the slump with that same kind of intensity almost.
Which is great to see, because that's, yeah, it's kind of one of the things we had talked about probably last week, is that they had just been awful and their big names were not performing. They weren't really engaging. They weren't really playing well at all. And yeah, these last two games, Wheeler's got a whole bunch of points. Shifley's got like 6 points in his last two games. Like that's the type of performance they need out of them. And surprise, surprise, they start playing better, winning. They're more engaged, and they break their slump when their important players start producing.
Yeah, it's been a good time to turn it around, yeah, for sure.
Which luckily for them, despite their, you know, last 10 games of 4-5-1, they're still sitting second into the division, tied with St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they got to keep it going. No, they can't take the foot off the gas now. Okay, well, one more thing I wanted to kind of talk about here was just the Florida Panthers. I don't know if you watched any of their games last week, but they had a lot of comebacks.
Like, yeah, so that's a really cool trend to see out of a team, is the amount of the way that they're winning their games is the best way to say that.
Yeah, like I think like they started against the Capitals. I think it was they were down 4-0, maybe 4-1. They came back and won it, which was sad for me, but it was impressive to see. And then I think they did the same to Buffalo, where they were down in the first by like multiple goals and then just had a bunch unanswered in a row. And I think they did another one. I had another one. I didn't watch.
Yeah, St. Louis, they probably did the same a couple days ago. They won that one in a shootout.
But yeah, it was like Huberto's first star of the week, because he had like one goal and like eight assists or something, and he was just, you know, remarkable. And it's like
he single-handedly cost you two fantasy matchups.
that's true. But you know, gotta give credit where credit's due. You know, they've had like Duclair out of the lineup, but most importantly they've had Barkov out of the lineup, and like those wins are huge, right? So especially against, you know, Eastern Conference teams, like Buffalo's in division, Capitals are not in the same division but same conference, so could impact, you know, seeding and stuff for wild cards if they drop a little bit. But you know, those are huge wins, and to play how they're playing without probably their most important player Barkov it's impressive, especially because like they have a new coach, they've had kind of some things shaken up, and they're never really out of a game. Like they're fun to watch.
No, and like the St. Louis game wasn't a huge comeback, but they scored the tying goal with like 2.5 minutes left.
Yeah, you know, comeback. So
they're still doing that late in games, and you know those three games that we just talked about, they had 51 shots against Washington, 45 against Buffalo, and 51 against St. Louis.
Yeah, and I can't remember exactly. I don't have the stats in front of me, but in that third period against Washington, they had something like 30 shots to Washington's like two. Like, it was, the ice was absolutely tilted. Like, I don't know what's their new head coach's name?
I think it's Brunette, Andrew Brunette.
Yeah, Andrew Brunette. I don't know what he said to them like in that intermission, but they came out just so hot, and like, they had an insane amount of shots. Like, the Caps play-by-play guys were like, that's not a typo. That's how many shots they have. It was like, holy shit. Like, we're losing this game. Like, we're up by like two and it's not enough. Like, we're going to lose. So yeah, it's just, man, they're rolling. Like, they're looking like a team that is on a mission to win a Stanley Cup.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if they could win a playoff round, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we see that Tampa Bay versus Florida playoff series again, because that would be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Florida's sitting first in the league right now. They're 17-4-3. Like, you know, they're probably not going to get that Tampa matchup in the first round, but you know,
I'd love to see it though.
They're currently either, it's going to be like Detroit or Pittsburgh would be their first round matchup with the wild card spot.
Detroit, yeah.
Be Detroit, I think.
Yeah, they're fun. They're fun to watch. They're definitely a team that I make time out of my, you know, if there's a bunch of games going on, I'll throw their game on because it's fun.
The Florida Panthers finally have fans.
Yeah, they got a fan in me.
Still have to make a joke about that.
Yeah, I got a lot of their players in different fantasy teams, so I'm invested.
Except for Anton Lundell.
Yeah, fucking guy. He's had a good week, but I had him before and he did nothing, drop. Oh, I'm going to get like 3 points a game now. Okay, fine. Go ahead.
This is a different topic.
Oh, no. It's all good.
Okay. On a completely opposite note to the Florida Panthers right now is the New York Islanders. Yeah. Who are on, what, a 10 or 11 game losing streak? Yeah. They're sitting 5-10-5, 15 points in their 20 games, like one of the bottom teams in the league.
Yeah, could there be changes?
Yeah, so we're seeing the coaching carousel start a bit now. A couple of moves in a short period of time. Is Barry Trotz's seat hot right now? Has he earned some time to, you know, struggle a bit because of the team situation, having a weird ass schedule to start the year, a bunch of injuries, bunch of COVID postponements, not really being able to find a groove yet. Does he have that leeway? Are they gonna give more of the season to come back a bit, or do they need to make a change quickly so they don't get too far behind in a tough division?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, they've been one of the most successful teams in the past, what, like three seasons. They've made it, you know, to the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, like, what, 2 or 3 years or something. So I don't know how much time that buys them, because they're losing a lot of games. And they were expected to be a favorite.
They were one of my cup final picks, that this would probably be the year.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, how long do you let that losing streak go? Like, if it hits double digits, right? I think you got to be like, okay, leash is extremely short.
Exactly.
Because that's a eighth of the season. That's significant.
They haven't... As of today, actually, they haven't won a game in a month.
Oh,
their last win was November the 6th against Winnipeg.
That's like my beer league team, man. That's terrible. Yeah, I mean, there might be another Capitals former coach available on the market soon, right?
Do we see a quick change here, and then do we see Barry Trotz heading over to Philly?
Yeah.
Is that getting too many steps ahead of ourselves here?
I mean, honestly, like, for the same reason we were talking about Green maybe getting fired, Trotz, you could say the same thing about Trotz, right? Like, he doesn't rely on Like, he doesn't let his offensive players do their thing, it seems, in the Islanders. Like, you know, it seems
really... the whole save Matt Barzal narrative.
Yeah, he's like, really reined in Barzal. Yeah. Just, you know, like, playing the identity line, like, at the beginning of each game. So you're, like, basically on the back foot. Like, you know, they're out there to hit. So you're just, like, letting them lose the face-off, basically. And then, anyway, so it's just, like, I don't know how much rope Lou's going to give him, but it seems like we've been talking about this for, like, 3 episodes now. So it's got to be at least alarm bells going off in the Islanders' front office here, right? Like, we got to shake things up, but at the same time, it's, like, who is out there that would be a better offensive coach at the moment now?
That's the thing, too, is, like, could you even bother bringing in an offensive-minded coach? Because the team isn't built to do that anyways. Compared to what Vancouver has, like, I think Vancouver's got a more offensively talented roster.
Yeah.
You know, you could absolutely find, like, a more middle road coach. Like, someone who's not going to rein in the offensive players at the expense of their talent.
Yeah, it's like you just got to run with the younger guys, right? Like, Trotz was, I mentioned this before, but, like, Capitals fans were just so pissed off at Trotz year after year. Cause it's like, play Vrana, play Burakovsky, play the young guys who have talent. Like, yeah, they're going to make some mistakes, but, like, they can score. Whereas, like,
yeah.
You know, like Jason Chimera and stuff, like, aren't going to score.
Yeah, and he's doing exactly that with Oliver Wahlstrom right now.
Yeah, exactly.
He's getting 13 minutes of ice time per game, despite having 7 goals, second in the team in goals. And I talked about this one too, he publicly called out Wahlstrom for the way he was playing a game when he got benched or something in the last part of a game a couple weeks back.
Yeah, so how, I don't know, it's just their last 10, 07-3, bottom of the Metro.
Mm-hmm. And, like, that's, for a team that was supposed to be competitive, way more competitive this season, like, you can't sit on that for too long.
Yeah, you've got one less win than Ottawa. You got the same amount of wins as Arizona. Doesn't matter how many games you've played, that's bad. So, now, to put things into perspective, like, the Canucks have 25 games played, they're 8-15-2, and the Islanders have played 20 games, they're 5-10-5. So, yeah, they've lost a few more games in overtime compared to the Canucks, but, you know, their points percentage is pretty similar.
Pretty close.
You know, the Islanders are a little bit better. Very, very small amount. But, you know, and another thing here is, like, they're 0-4-2 at home. Like, that's new building. You want to try and get new, like, season ticket holders and sell a bunch of merch and, you know, get people excited about this team that's gone on to, the conference finals, and you're 0-4-2 at home.
The players are just annoyed that they can't have drinks named after them in the concession stands.
Yeah. Well, it's like people want to see goals, you know? They want to see offense. They don't want to see, like, the team just getting their shit kicked in. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like if this week, if they have a negative record, I could see them making a change. But, again, I don't know who's out there that they could bring in. Like, I don't know who their AHL guy is, if they've got someone a little bit more willing to trust younger players and let them kind of, you know, be a bit, I don't know, out of system with the way that they play the game. Maybe they could bring somebody in, but I don't know who's available right now as far as, like, established NHL head coaches that are willing to let guys do offensive things.
Yeah, because I guess, too, Lamoriello probably isn't going to go with some random new coach or younger coach. He's probably going to want some, you know, grizzled old vet.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he'll bring in Tockett.
There you go. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That could actually be, that could actually be a thing.
Yeah, it really could. Okay, well, on the flip side of like losing streaks, I wanted to give a shout out to the Dallas Stars because they've slowly, maybe, I don't know how quiet it's been, but they've kind of been turning their season around. Like they're still, you know, in the bottom of like the Central, but their season outlook looks so much better right now than it did.
We're going to put bottom in air quotes here because they're sure they're sitting sixth, but they have 26 points and 3 games in hand over Winnipeg, who has 28 points.
Yeah.
They're not really in the bottom per se.
They have the exact same record as Colorado. Yeah.
Better points percentage than the teams in the playoff spots too. So, you know, give them a few more games and they'd probably be tied first, second and third.
Yeah. And so like they've really come out of like obscurity basically.
Yeah. And that's due in part to a 6-game win streak.
Yeah. And they're 8-2-0 in their last 10. Yeah. And, they've been fun to watch. You know, Rupe Hintz has definitely come alive. Jason Robertson has been really good. And Pavelski, that whole line of Hintz, Pavelski, and Robertson has been money so far, you know, especially the last couple of weeks. But I wanted to give them a shout-out for kind of a cool record that they set. I don't know if you heard about this, but they became the first team in NHL history to score in the opening 75 seconds of a game in 4 consecutive games. That's pretty cool.
That's, yeah. I mean, how great is that from, you know, from a pure winning perspective? Like, oh, great, you're basically starting the game with a 1-goal advantage.
Yeah. I was watching, I watched the start of the fourth game against Columbus where Robertson scored. And the Stars play-by-play guy was like, okay, well, how long into this streak are we going to just start putting, you know, like, a goal up on the like the jumbo.
Yeah, goal up with the opening faceoff.
Yeah,
and you know what? I wouldn't put it past them if it was a home game. I wouldn't put it past the Stars jumbotron crew to do that as a joke.
Yeah, they're pretty funny. So yeah, it's Pavelski got the first one, which was against Colorado, and then Hintz got the next two against Arizona and Carolina, and then Robertson got the last one against Columbus. So I don't know, kind of cool, and I was surprised that was a record. I would have thought that Vegas would have had something like that, because when they first came into the league, it seemed like every game I watched, they scored like a minute in their first year in the league there, but maybe it was a little bit wider of a window, or maybe they just didn't do it as consistently as I thought they did, but kind of cool. So props to them. I think, you know, this hot streak as of late has really, I don't know, cooled the seat of Rick Bowness.
Yeah. Well, when I was thinking about topics for today, I still had, you know, because we had talked about Bowness's seat being hot if the Stars had struggled. I had to check in and see where they were at because I hadn't really seen where they were, if they had bounced back or not. With all these coaching changes, would Dallas be next? But no, if someone goes on an 8-2 stretch like that, your seat's probably safe for a bit.
Yeah, they've been really good, and I think part of it is that they've been playing at home recently too. Like they've had a pretty, I think, extended home stand, and so they've kind of been getting their mojo back a bit, which is cool. And Braden Holtby like was on fire for them against Carolina, where he had like 40 saves or something. Like he had a really good game. So I guess I'm open about my fandom for them, so I've been watching them quite a bit, but they've been fun to watch. And one thing to note is that Jamie Benn and Alexander Radulov has been pretty much invisible throughout this hot streak. I think they've got maybe a couple points here and there, but I think Sagan's been a little bit more noticeable, but it's really been that Jason Robertson, Pavelski, and Hintz, and Gurionov has had, I don't know, streaks here and there, but it's really been that one line has been really good.
Yeah, well, I mean, Sagan, Ben, and Radulov, 10, 9, and 9 points, respectively, in 21 games. So they're, you know, they're well behind the team's leading scorers.
Yeah, and I think Ben has kind of transitioned into, like, more of a checking line forward anyway, so
It seems to be a natural trajectory for a career path of his, where he's more of a bigger power forward with skating issues. So he's going to have to not stop worrying about the offense that he can't generate as well anymore without the speed, and just be a guy who gets in the way of everything.
Yeah, get the puck deep and set up the offensive line for offensive zone start, basically. That's your job now. Perhaps overpaid to do that, but you know, he's definitely put his time in with that franchise. So anyway, Stars have been turning it around, and it's kind of cool to see them have the same record as Colorado after they've had a really bad start. I guess Colorado had a kind of shaky start too, but props to them.
I think the last thing that we should really be keeping an eye on as the season goes on here, because it's kind of starting to follow a similar trajectory as the Thrashers in their last season in Atlanta, is Arizona. So earlier this week, it had come out complete rumors from not sources that are even affiliated with hockey in any way, just financial people basically, suggesting that there's talk of the Arizona Coyotes being for sale, and the buyer would move them to a new arena in Houston. And of course, the team and the league are like, absolutely not, 100% false. But like, what are they going to say? Like, oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But for context in this situation, the Coyotes don't have an arena after this season. There's nothing in place. There's no real buildings nearby to my knowledge. I think the latest I had heard was over the summer or something, and they had like a university building they might have to temporarily go into, if not change cities again. And you know, this team has been in financial turmoil for most of its existence. So
yeah,
it's kind of starting to look a lot like that Thrasher situation, where they don't have a stable arena, they have weird financial stuff, and then sort of in the winter of their last season, it starts coming out that the team's for sale, the team's, you know, they're looking for local buyers, but they don't find a local buyer. Then someone from the outside comes in, and then by the end of the regular season, early playoffs, it could be, you know, time's up for Arizona.
Yeah, like you said, what's the league and the team going to say right now? Yeah, we're for sale. No, because then no one's going to go to their games. No one's going to buy their shit. All the players are going to get, you know, I want to trade. Yeah, they're not going to confirm that, but, you know, it makes sense for them to be up for sale. And, you know, financial people are going to know when like a organization that's that big is for sale. It's going to be, you know, certain lists of people that know about it. So,
yeah. And, like the team, the players itself, they have like maybe two or three players signed past the end of next season. So this isn't a team that has a lot of players with ties to the city at this point. It's a bunch of guys at the end of contracts or temporary players. This one is completely random, but I'd seen someone, like a Stars fan, who had said that the team had started branding itself as Texas Hockey, which was new to them. Like, usually they didn't worry about the state. They just kind of focused on the city. But if there's rumblings that the team might have competition in Texas right away with a move to Houston, then they have to start competing for the state rather for more of the state, I guess.
Yeah, because it's
also just random marketing stuff. Who knows?
Well, I mean, yeah, but like you think about it, it's like in other sports, right? You've got like, well, in MLB, right? You've got the Texas Rangers, which I believe are based out of Dallas. And then you've got like the Houston Astros.
The Houston Trash Cans, mind you.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just going to double check here. Texas Rangers are based in Texas. Yeah, thanks. Dallas-Fort Worth. So Dallas-Fort Worth. So they are that same kind of area. So, like, you know, there could be some alignment there to name them. But the Texas Stars, I think, is the AHL team, isn't it?
Correct.
So
aren't
I don't
they
think
in
we'd
Austin?
See... I don't know. Austin. So that the capital. Interesting Google result here. I'll talk about it in a minute, but I don't know. It'd be interesting to see that, because like there's like the Dallas Mavericks, Dallas Cowboys, obviously. So
well, the Houston Rockets too. Like,
yeah,
Houston has a professional sports presence already. So the thing is, they move him to Houston for next season. They have an arena that's capable of holding an NHL team. They'd have to do some, you know, work to get the arena to NHL level, but it's got the attendance. It's got the facilities because other teams share an NBA facility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's like, it makes sense. I mean, if it's not working and like all the cities in Arizona don't want to have them because they lose money, put them somewhere where people will be into them.
Yeah. And Houston has a massive population in its metro area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that interesting Google result that I alluded to, Ben Bishop to play in his first game this week in a conditioning assignment with the Texas Stars.
I saw that earlier, but I didn't want to mention it so I could still stash him in fantasy.
Yeah, I had him in another league for a long time, and I just dropped him because like, my other team got destroyed by injuries, and I was like, you know what? My goalies are Markstrom, Bobrovsky, and Saros, so I think I don't need to hold on to Ben Bishop. But yeah, that's kind of interesting. Ben Bishop to play in the NHL. And the Stars have such an interesting goalie dynamic right now.
Over the weekend, I had seen that the team has started to shop Anton Khudobin.
That makes sense because he hasn't been playing at all.
Yeah, and the sucky part is going to be that it's probably going to end up being Jake Oettinger if Ben Bishop is, you know, up to NHL level again, if he can handle it. Jake Oettinger is the only one that they don't have to put through waivers to send to minors. So despite Oettinger being like the future guy, he's been really good for the Stars for the last couple seasons. He's probably going to end up back in the minors because he's the only one that they don't have to lose.
Yeah, it sucks, but it makes sense.
Yeah, from a roster moves point. So I don't know. We'll have to see how that goalie situation resolves itself when they have four NHL capable goalies.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But we'll see how that conditioning stint does too. Maybe he doesn't play anymore. Like,
yeah,
it's maybe been a it long time. And then the other goalie that is kind of in a similar type of boat is Tuukka Rask in Boston. He's practicing with the team. Yeah, not he's signed.
Their, he's the emergency backup right now.
So apparently his hip rehab is going really good. You know, the team has said he's going to be with us this season. There's just no deal in place right now. So, you know, Ullmark has been, I don't know, a step up from dog shit, maybe. Like, he hasn't been good. Swayman has been really good. But he could be perhaps in the same boat as Oettinger, where it's like, you know, you've been good, but we don't have to lose you if we put you through waivers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, get down to the minors, go to Providence. So yeah, I don't know. It's unless they shop Ullmark or something and Rask is really good to go, but yeah, we'll see. I'm kind of curious to see what happens there. Cause I picked up Rask in fantasy just to preemptively have him on my team, so I hope he gets signed and I can dump Ullmark because that guy sucks. But yeah, they've only got three guys, but Dallas has four, so they've got to move somebody, and that makes sense that they're shopping Khudobin because he hasn't been even suiting up. So team that needs a backup or like a lower tier 1B guy. Sure.
Or in the case of a couple of the teams, an actual goalie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who where do you think he might land?
I mean, I would still say Buffalo's in the market because Malcolm Subban's not a solution, I don't think. He's not quite a starter, and it doesn't seem like Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's really there to take the rollover yet. He's just been called up, I think, and hasn't really played much this season. Arizona could still use a goalie. I'm sure they'd take the cap dump, but I mean, Vemelka's been doing really well on that team.
Wedgewood's had his moments.
Yeah, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, Georgiev's not been good in New York, so maybe the Rangers need a backup in Khudobin.
Another sort of Russian. I think Dobby's actually Kazakh, so
yeah,
but speaks Russian. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe like, what do you think about like Ottawa?
That's a possibility.
Forsberg, Gustafsson, and Murray.
Like
so,
Forsberg. I think it's Forsberg is getting most of their games right now. He's been good, hasn't he?
I think. I don't know. It's tough to tell with Ottawa, but I think
yeah,
he's been the best.
Good in relative terms here, not to.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I don't know. There's probably a few other teams.
So Forsberg in 8 games, .893 save percentage, .413 goals against average. Gustafsson in 10 games, .899 save percentage, .364 goals against average. So. Ignore what I said. Neither of them have been particularly good. So
yeah.
Yes, Ottawa could be a potential landing spot for a goalie.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind too that Hudobin has a 3.73 goals against and a .873 save percentage this season.
Oh, so he'd fit right in.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's definitely been the clear cut worst of the goalies that they have. So yeah, it makes sense for them to want to move him. I don't know what his value is, but we see future considerations traded around quite a bit.
Yeah.
So
future considerations has been making their way around the league the last 10 months here.
Yeah, absolutely.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.